You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to hear an honest chat about those times when a kale smoothie might not be the right answer. I know, right? I thought a kale smoothie was the answer for everything. Hunger, thirst, bad dreams, wet dreams, big dreams, dreams being crushed. Okay, I'm stuck on dreams. But it turns out that a kale smoothie is sometimes not the answer. Sometimes the answer is, in fact, pizza or cuddles. You'll hear how to decipher the difference in a minute. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. Today's episode is all about the power of plants, and I can think of no better sponsor for this show than a company who makes consuming more plants more easy. Amazing Grass. Point blank, I love amazing grasses, which if you listen to this podcast or take a peek at my Instagram, you surely know by now. Their green superfood powders are an insanely tasty blend of nutritious greens, phytonutrient-packed fruits, veggies, grasses, digestive enzymes, and probiotics that I can't and don't want to live without. Don't make me live without it. I'm personally an enormous fan of their watermelon energy flavor, which I drink practically every morning. But they've got a massive assortment of grassy products to check out and fall in love with. They even have a kid's superfood, chocolate flavored, which I wish my mommy fed me when I was a kid instead of that Ovaltine crap. Anyway, to make Amazing Grass even more amazing, if that's possible, they're offering Party in My Plants podcast listeners 40% off. Yes, 40, almost 50% off all of your Amazing Grass orders if you go to their website, amazinggrass.com, and use the coupon code PLANTSPARTY40 at checkout. That's PLANTSPARTY40 at checkout on amazinggrass.com. And all that info is linked in the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/83. My guest today is an author, a health coach, a speaker, and a fun food blogger behind Food Mood Girl. She also happens to dwell in one of my favorite non-New York City cities, Pittsburgh, where I go to cheer on the Steelers and eat great veggie burgers with my family who lives there. But this is about Lindsay Smith, not me. So yeah, Lindsay's really passionate about creating planty recipes, not just for taste bud jeweler pleasure, but also for mental and emotional pleasure as well. Her latest book is called Eat Your Feelings, which is a title that I just ate up. And so I wanted to bring her on to talk to us about, well, how to eat our feelings. Pretty straightforward. Although be forewarned, cravings? Not so straightforward as you're about to learn. Lindsay, thanks so much for popping on my podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
On your Totes Adorbs website, you describe yourself as an author, a health coach, a speaker, a wellness icon, and a rapper. care to explain the latter?
it's kind of an interesting story. So my first concert ever was the Spice Girls, and then my second concert ever was Ja Rule. So you can see that I have a wide range of musical interests.
My first concert was Spice Girls too.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I wrote poetry and was kind of obsessed with writing poetry. I really liked rap music because I thought that, you know, a lot of it was poetry, and especially I liked like some deeper type of rap too that talked about like issues facing today and facing people. So yeah, I'd always really liked it. And when I was about 21, maybe, I was asked to be in a talent show. And this was when I was just starting Food Mood Girl and kind of my identity and things like that within the wellness space. And my friend said, hey, there's this benefit talent show for children. You know, it's benefiting this children organization. I'd love to have you, you know, be a part of the talent show. And immediately I'm like, well, how can I say no to, you know, something benefiting kids? So I said, sure, yeah, I'll do it. And I didn't really stop to think that I don't really have many talents. Like I really can't, I can't do many things. Like as far as something that would be cool to see or hear, like I can't dance. I can't put a spoon on my nose. Like I can't do anything. So I was trying to think of something that I could do. It was like a week out or 2 weeks out. And I'm like, I really don't have anything. So I kind of embraced my inner child and was like, well, you know what? I could write a poem and recite it. So I went and I was really excited about this idea. And I told my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, and said, hey, you know, what do you think about me reciting this poem? And he was just like, I mean, yeah, that's cool. Like you do what you want. And he didn't,
like he loved it.
Yeah. He didn't seem too excited about it. So then I said, I like kind of went back and was like, well, how can I make this more exciting? So I said, what if I put like a beat to it? So I went and asked him, I was like, hey, I got this really great idea. Like, you know, I have this poem that I was going to recite, but what if I put like a beat to it or a background music or something? And he was like, Lindsay, that's rapping. And I was like, done doing it. So I did this rap with my friend and I did it together, actually. And, you know, people had their phones out and eventually it made its way on YouTube and people were talking about it. And then I think the foundational moment was whenever, and it was about food and mood. It was about like beans and greens and stuff like that. And so I was giving a lecture or I was giving a talk at this, this one conference, and the woman was like, and now we got Lindsay Smith in the house. She's an author. She's a health coach. She's a rapper. And I was like, oh my God, she saw that YouTube video. Like,
oh,
because I had not talked about it really. And so she saw that and she's like, oh yeah, it was so fun. I was hoping you could do that. And so then it just kind of became a thing. And then I started making up more raps and I may or may not be launching a rap video this year. So,
oh my God, like a music video.
Yeah, I've made a rap that goes along with my book, and
God.
I got it like professionally produced. It has like its own beat. It's really fun and funny. So I'll be doing that later this year.
That is amazing and hilarious, and I cannot wait to see it. That's so funny. So thank you. You proved that rapper, you know, thing in your bio is in fact true.
It is.
Well done. That's so cool. So then now tell us how Food Mood Girl came to be, as we're telling how things are true and came to be.
Yeah. So, you know, I really feel like I've been the Food Mood Girl ever since I was a kid. I just didn't have the title back then, but I really started my journey through personal experience. I suffered from anxiety as a kid and was hospitalized. And I tried different things. I tried therapy, and what really worked for me was going to a wellness center in my hometown and focusing on really like the nutritional aspect, the physical, you know, movement aspect, and the kind of self-care, self-love, personal development aspect. And as a young kid, I did focus on all those things. And I went from this girl who had to strategically plan the way I got to school because of the anxiety, because I didn't like to be seen by others and always wanted to hide myself, to by ninth grade, I was teaching stress management workshops at student council conferences.
Wow.
So this has been, you know, part of who I am and who I've always been. And I think, you know, the catalyst for me was, you know, going to college, some of those anxieties came back. Instead of turning to food like I did for comfort when I was a kid, I turned to alcohol. And I just had a moment of, you know, through recognizing, you know, I had these anxieties again, I basically reverted back to my 12-year-old self, going through all of the work that I had done when I was a kid to get help. And so I kind of did that again. And that's when I realized, that's when it just it kind of came together for me. And when I realized that, you know, I'd been struggling with these things, and even though I'd overcome them as a young child, you know, they stemmed back up through different experiences. And so I then tackled it again head on and wanted to really go deeper into the, you know, personal development and understanding my body and nutrition and health. And so I went back into that again. And that's whenever I decided to become a health coach. And that's really when the Food Mood Girl was born. That was in like 2010, 2011. And I just felt like, you know, these were the topics based off personal experience and things that I knew to be true and ways that I wanted to help people. And so that's really when it was born. But I've been doing this work, you know, pretty much more than half my life.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, I mean, I watched your TEDx talk about loving yourself and, you know, self-acceptance and body confidence. And it sounds like you first had quite the struggle and the journey, you know, battling anxiety and then self-confidence. And then it sounds like you had a second journey, for lack of a better word, through an eating disorder and, you know, learning how to not emotionally eat, or, you know, not binge eat or whatever, you know, the eating disorder stuff was. So it sounds like first it was that self-acceptance, anxiety. I don't know if those are lumped together, and then the eating stuff later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was, you know, it definitely was all of those things. I think when I started working with my mentor as a kid, he, you know, focused on one thing at a time. It didn't overwhelm me, but every week or every 2 weeks that we would meet, it would be implementing something new into my lifestyle. And through that, he also created space for me to talk. He listened to me and, you know, also allowed me to process my feelings and emotion and to actually feel them for honestly the first time in a, you know, in my, as a child, where so much of my time had been spent trying to mask what I was feeling. Whereas he, I feel like, gave me the space to actually, you know, be okay with being angry or frustrated or, you know, experiencing grief or even experiencing joy and happiness. That's something that currently I'm trying to work on, because so much of my time has been spent processing emotions that I realized that I haven't really processed even happy emotions, mm-hmm. like when they happen, or joy, and being mm-hmm. able to sit in with that, because I'm trying, you know, I'm like, well, you just got to move on to the next thing, but actually stopping and appreciating even the good things.
That's fascinating. I find that it's much easier for me personally to experience the negative emotions or be like, I feel blah, blah, blah negative. But it's weird. I don't know. It feels kind of weird to be like, I feel really happy right now. In general, I don't know, is it common to you in your work that people have an easier time at least processing or noticing negative feelings than embracing positive ones?
I think inherently so. I think, well, people feel the negative feelings, but they don't want to. So they seek things to help void it, but they don't actually get to the root of why they're feeling. They don't actually allow themselves to fully feel it. And then in turn, when they're feeling happy, it's kind of that, almost that self-sabotage syndrome that's like, well, I'm feeling happy, so I need to do something to pull me back into the negative, because even this may be too much. And I think it's, you know, I think it's because we're, you know, we're complex people and we're always trying to find a middle ground and we're trying to kind of find balance within ourselves and within our bodies. And so it's easier to feel sad. And then it's like, well, happy. It's like, well, okay, that's also an extreme emotion, or joyful. And so I need to like bring it down. And we're kind of constantly like teetering back and forth. And so I think it's definitely, there's more to it than just, I think, being easier to process negative emotions. I think that we're just so used to avoiding them. And then once we get to happiness, we're like, well, this is weird too. Yeah. Should I be feeling this? And then we kind of go back and forth until we can finally say, okay, like, it's okay to feel sad. I'm going to feel sad in this moment. I'm going to be okay with that. And then when there's something really good that happens, or if you want to soak up, you know, an accomplishment or something that you did, we can also allow ourselves to experience the happiness with it as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're on the topic of feelings here, and your most recent book, Eat Your Feelings, you know, focuses on transforming one's lifestyle by learning from cravings and like dealing kind of with emotional eating. So how did, you know, cravings and food get added to this puzzle for you? You know, it sounds like you grew up and you learned how to deal with the feelings and all the stuff, but when did food kind of get married to that for you?
Food was pretty early on in my personal journey, because that's what my mentor focused on, was changing up the way that I ate. It's interesting because all of this happened to me so young, so I can look back now as an adult and see how much it impacted me. Whereas in the moment, you know, I was going with it and I felt a lot better and was completely changed. But I think as an adult, I was like, wow, that's actually really like interesting and really cool that I learned that as a kid. And so I think, you know, the first thing that my mentor kind of said to me was, okay, like, let's look at what you're eating. And so I was eating 2 bags of nacho cheese Doritos with cheese dip, a Twix bar, and a sweetened iced tea every day for lunch. And he didn't judge me. He didn't say, oh my goodness, that's so bad. What are you doing with your life? He just said, okay, you know, this looks like a lot of this color. What if we just put some more color into your diet? And, you know, what if we just focused on that? And so I didn't even, you know, understanding cravings and getting to the bottom of that, it wasn't really a thing that I was thinking about. I was just saying, oh, it was kind of like a fun little a challenge. Like, okay, yeah, I can incorporate, you know, these colors in. And he had a little chart on what the, you know, colors did and for the body. And so I started very simply, very small, and I just kind of built up. And I think once, and then again, I was feeling better. I felt more energetic. I just felt, you know, healthier. And then I was able to therefore process emotions differently. And then I think once I got older and really dived deep into kind of the food and mood connection, that's when I decided to go deeper into cravings, because I realized that they're such an integral part of one, our, you know, just our DNA and how we process foods and what we, you know, as complex humans tend to want at certain emotional states. And so that's when I really dove deeper into that, because I think as I got older, it became more apparent the things in my past that I did when I was craving something, or the way that I used food or used cravings to, you know, to deal with certain feelings or emotions. And I realized that I also wasn't alone in this, that it's the majority of people, you know, have certain feelings or emotions wrapped up in what they eat.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. How would you define emotional eating?
You know, one of the things that I'm trying to do with this book, Eat Your Feelings, is reclaim what it means to be an emotional eater, because for so long, it's been a very negative thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it that way at all. I mean, I see that it's definitely a spectrum, and it can be, it could be detrimental depending on how far you take it, for sure, because everything is a, you know, can be a spectrum. But so many people say things like, oh, I'm eating my feelings, or I'm an emotional eater. And there's this negative stigma that, you know, if you are feeling a certain way, that you use food as a coping mechanism. And that's what I think most people think of. And in general, that's pretty much what it can be. However, if you are truly want to emotionally eat, you can do it in a positive way, and you can reclaim what it means to you to be an emotional eater, because I believe that we were born emotional eaters. If you think of babies, you know, when they're hungry, what do? They cry to let you know that they're hungry. It's an emotional response that we have towards food. And it is deeply emotional from both a physical and kind of mental standpoint. And so being able to truly go a little bit deeper and learn from the cravings, what they're telling you, what your body may really need, and also addressing the feelings, you know, addressing when you are feeling sad, you know, why are you feeling sad? What's making you feel sad? You know, what do you tend to gravitate towards? What types of food when you're sad? And all of these questions, and going just that little step to go a little bit deeper, can actually tell you so much about yourself and your body, so that you can actually fuel it, feed it, nourish it, both nutritionally and maybe in other ways that don't include food, but that your body really needs. And so that's in a long answer to your question. I think that, you know, the stigma with emotional eating has been strong for a long time, but I think, you know, I'm trying to help reclaim that and help people dig a little bit deeper so that they can actually understand that we are emotional eaters, but let's go deeper so that we can figure out the root causes and actually fuel our bodies rather than constantly try to fill a void or mask them.
Totally. So what are some first steps that you suggest people do if they want to spin the emotional eating thing into being more of a positive? What are some ways to do that?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's obviously being aware. I think awareness in any situation, is crucial to taking the next step in it. And then I also think it just, stopping and asking the questions. I think instead of trying to completely follow something regimented in order to feel better, or, before kind of going maybe extreme or whatever it may be, just stopping and assessing your feelings, asking yourself questions, what am I craving? When am I craving it? How long has the been craving going on? What's going on emotionally in my life? And just stopping and taking that second or, minute or 2 minutes to actually address those deeper concerns. Because I think what happens then is by going a little bit deeper, you start to unlock, things in your body and in your mind that you didn't even know existed, you didn't even know was maybe an issue by just stopping and taking the time. I just think that we move so fast through life, and food and emotions kind of become a thing that, emotions we don't want to feel because we're just trying to move through, and food becomes a thing that you just need in order to, move throughout your day and stay alive. And so we don't often stop to just think about it. And I think just simply asking and making, an intentional choice to ask those questions can actually start to tell you a whole lot. And then from there, in the book, I break it down, by different things. Like if you're craving certain foods, it can, it could be a mineral deficiency. It could be an emotional, connection.
Yeah, let's talk about those foods. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to go through that because you break them down into five different chunks of cravings, and then you offer suggestions for what someone's body might actually be craving, or ways that they can satisfy that craving. So do you mind if we just kind of go through that list and you fill in the blanks?
Yeah. So for example, if you're craving something, sweet, uh-huh. It could be, that your body is really looking for natural energy, mm-hmm. Or it could mean that you're very stressed. You need more rest or balance. And so, you can incorporate things into your diet like dark leafy greens or berries, grounding vegetables as well, such as like sweet potatoes or carrots. It may also mean that you need more rest, sleep, maybe getting on a sleep routine, maybe spending time with your friends and family because, you may be stressed out.
Well, let me ask you this. So if you're craving something sweet, if the list of things you just suggested, like dark leafy greens or berries or like sweet potatoes, carrots, if that doesn't sound appealing and you're just like, damn it, I just really want like dried mango or I don't know, something that's, I guess I crave dried mango a lot, but like sweeter things, would you say maybe try the leafy greens instead? Or do you think it's important to, if you're craving dried mango, enjoy the dried mango, or try to prioritize like family time or de-stressing? Like, how do you deal with that if the list of like, maybe you really want kale when you're craving sweet, like doesn't feel like I want mango?
Yeah. And that's something that I often laugh about. It's like, yeah, if you're stressed out and you want something sweet, or you're sad and you want something sweet, I don't think that a kale smoothie is going to do it for you. I mean, it could. For some people, it definitely can't. I know for me, sometimes, I'm like, okay, I'll make this instead. And then I just kind of see how my body reacts and I see, okay, did that satisfy it or is it something more? And I think it just, this is definitely a process thing. It's not something that's like immediate. I think the best question I've received so far in the book tour was, do you see your method as preventative or prescriptive? And I thought that was so fascinating because and it took me a second to think about it because I think that it's both, but you can't expect be one or the other, or you can't expect an immediate result. So if you are, you want something sweet and yeah, there's, dark leafy greens, berries, whatever. And, we're complex people. So if you eat those things, you may still have a sweet craving because maybe there's something deeper going on, or maybe it's just eat the sweet thing that you want and be done with it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of factors in that. And so, so it's important to kind of keep that in mind. The other thing in the book specifically is that I created recipes that are kind of the comfort classic. So if you are craving sweet food, it does have like the eat your feelings recipes, like it's on this chart. So there's cookie dough contraband, a sweet potato chips, my date night bites. There's a smoothie. There's, you know, macaroni and cheese. There's, and all of these things include mood boosting ingredients that actually help your body. So it kind of mimics, you know, that comfort craving food that you want, but it includes the sample nutrients to incorporate. So there's a multitude of ways to kind of come to that conclusion. And I think experimenting and seeing and asking yourself the question can help you start to kind of figure out for your body, you know, what works. So for you, it may be dried mango. And yeah, it may not be a nutrient on that list. But for you, when you're craving something sweet, that's what satisfies it. And that's what makes you, you know, feel good. Great. Continue to do that. But in 6 months from now, it may be something different, you know? And so it's just kind of always being open and aware to that.
Totally. Okay. That's awesome. Great answer. What about salty food? If you're craving something salty, what are you really craving?
So salty food, usually your body needs natural minerals that are found in, you know, unrefined sea salt. Also, you may need more water. You may tend to have some retention. So you can incorporate foods that have kind of like a natural salt content, like root vegetables or even sea vegetables are a great source to get that. Also, foods with a higher water content can help. So foods like cucumbers or celery or pineapple, things like that can help you incorporate that. And then in the book, I have like these really easy hand rolls to make. There's cucumber cups I have a zucchini pasta. So there's different ways to kind of get the comfort classics, but incorporate those foods.
All right, cool. What about chocolate when you're craving chocolate?
Chocolate is I crave chocolate like all the time.
I think most people do.
And a lot of the time it could be a magnesium deficiency. I forget what the percentage is, but it's very high, the amount of people that are deficient in magnesium. I want to say it's like 85%. It's a lot of people. Mm. And so it makes sense that our bodies would crave chocolate because cacao has a higher magnesium, you know, numbers in it. So it could also mean it's, you know, magnesium can help with a multitude of things as well, as far as, you know, just making you feel better, balancing, helping balance and stable your blood sugar. So eating foods that, you know, you could eat raw cacao, you could throw it into a smoothie if you wanted. Nuts and seeds are a great way to get magnesium. If you're craving chocolate, sometimes it may be you also want something kind of sweet and chocolatey. So, you know, trying to go for natural sweeteners like maple syrup or honey or
dates.
Dates, absolutely. Mm. Dates. I love using dates. And then again, it could be chocolate could also be a hormonal thing as well. So just paying attention, you know, to your cycle and understanding that about yourself can also help kind of play the preventative role, but also the prescriptive role.
Totally. Yeah. Chocolate's crazy. That is it's also a very specific craving because it's funny, like sweet food is a big umbrella, salty food umbrella. Chocolate is a specific thing. It's like kind of the only one on your list. And really, I guess in general, like not a lot of people crave specific things such as chocolate, but that'll get you.
It will.
What about carbs? You have that as one of your categories, like breads and pastas.
Yeah. So usually, you know, your body really is seeking the whole grains. It wants, you know, it's also a comforting food, I think, for a lot of people. And so incorporating things that, you know, like you could do brown rice pasta instead so that you're still getting the whole grain. Or I love lentil pasta. That's one of my favorites. Quinoa, obviously, is another good one. Cauliflower, potatoes, things that can kind of give you that same feel as well. I think the bread and pasta, it definitely is, it's one that we tend to crave, I think, more from a comfort standpoint, is because our body is looking, you know, our body is looking to also mimic serotonin, and it can be found easily in things like pizza or pasta. You know, we get that quick serotonin fix to make ourselves, you know, happier and feel better, but it doesn't last long term, whereas more of the whole grains and, you know, quinoa, brown rice, things like that, those actually do help our body process serotonin, and it's over a longer period. So we'll tend to stay stabilized a lot longer.
Yeah. And I feel like those carbs and all that really help you. I don't know, at least for me, like they make me feel grounded. Like if I've had a really crazy day and I just want to like I don't know, like, I guess feel really full subconsciously, just like kind of plop there. That's when I crave the carbs a lot too.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a great example. And that just shows that you're in tune with your body by saying, okay, so what you just did there, and I know this seems like really silly, but this is like something that I would look for. It's okay. If I have a crazy day, I want to feel grounded and full. And that's why I tend to go for carb things because of that. So if you know that about yourself and you know that, okay, Wednesday is going to be a crazy day. And then you could, one, you could incorporate like whole grains into your diet throughout the day. So maybe, and then experiment to say by dinner time, did you feel more grounded throughout the day? And the need to have a whole grain carb rich meal at night, or did that help you throughout the day? So at night you do naturally feel more grounded, just playing around with it. Everybody's different, and everyone comes with a set of emotions and, a backstory essentially. We may have, carbs as a kid, we may have, crave mom's spaghetti or, whatever it may be. And so that also gives us a feeling, a sense of comfort. And so it's important to, when you say things like that out loud, to just take an inventory of it and then kind of just play with it, and I think that's where the fun comes from, because you become so aware of your body that you kind of just know what it needs. You're like, yeah. And then if you're like, yeah, well, today is, I'm going to make lentil pasta and have this kind of grounding meal, and that's just what it is.
Well, to play devil's advocate for a sec, I mean, well, really to ask the question, how crucial would you say, in your opinion, is it to listen to your cravings? Because I mean, I have crazy days most days, and I could really justify to myself eating like an enormous bowl of pasta every night because that's what I'm craving. But I do know that in the long run, that's really not what I want to eat. And I don't think that's what's going to make me thrive and the happiest in the long run, but it is often what I crave. So what's your thoughts on how crucial it is to listen to cravings? I know that's I feel like it's a tricky question, but let's see what you can offer us here.
Well, I'll answer it with a story.
Ooh, nice.
So in 2014 or 2015, I forget what year it was, but I'm from Pittsburgh, and it was a
Steelers.
And it was a rainy Saturday afternoon, and all of a sudden it was like 1 o'clock, and I get this intense craving for a grilled cheese. And I'm not talking like those Brooklyn grilled cheeses that are like $40 with like gold plated toast and avocado and whatever. I'm talking like I wanted white Wonder Bread, Lando Lakes butter, and like the imitation cheese slices. Like that's what I wanted. And, here I am, the food mood girl, a health coach, and that's what I'm craving. And that's what I want. So I grabbed my keys. I was like, I don't have any of those ingredients at my house, but this is what I really want. I'm going to honor this craving. I'm going to eat it. And I grabbed my keys, and then I just was like, wait. And I just stopped and I said, what do you really want right now? Is it the grilled cheese? If this is the grilled cheese and this is what you want and this is what you want to make, like there's no judgments, like do it, make it, feel good about it. And that will be that, and move on. Don't beat yourself up about it. Don't get upset about it. Just do it and feel good about it. So I was like, I can do that. Okay. But I just stopped and was like, well, what is it? What is going on here? And what do I really want? And so then I was like, well, maybe I'll go get a grilled cheese, and maybe I'll go get like a whole grain, like a sourdough bread from the bread shop down the street. So then I was like, okay, I can go get the, whatever, and put mood boost ingredients on it. I could go to the section, and I mean, I didn't have this book, but I could go to, what I knew to be true for when you're feeling a certain way, like what foods could help with it. And so I was like, okay, I can mimic a grilled cheese, make something healthier, And then I started asking myself, what am I really feeling here? Like, what's really going on? And what I realized is that this rainy Saturday afternoon gave me the same sense and mimicked kind of a memory that I had when I was 7 years old. And when I was seven, on rainy Saturday afternoons, my dad would make me a grilled cheese with the Wonder Bread and the Lando Lakes butter and the imitation cheese. And we would watch we would watch Unsolved Mysteries together, which why did you let your 7-year-old watch that is beyond me. But but that's what we would do. And so this was 2014, 2015. And my dad had died. He died in 2012.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So this was coming up a few years later. And what I realized in that moment is, you know, the grilled cheese was just a thing that I wanted, you know, because when I got to the heart of it, I was really missing my dad, you know, and I was using the grilled cheese as a way to kind of fulfill that. And so when I just simply asked the questions, I mean, this process, I dragged it out a little bit longer, but it didn't take long. It just, it took a minute to kind of, you know, center myself and realize, oh, okay, this is what it is. And so I think in situations, you know, those things come up and sometimes we don't even know what the deeper emotional thing is until we think about it. Or sometimes there's really no deeper emotional thing. It could be just something we want. But I think there's three ways to look at it. There's the, okay, eat the thing, eat it, feel good about it. Don't feel guilty about it. Know that it's like, you know, a one-time thing and allow yourself to do it and be done with it. Or you can make the healthier version of kind of that comfort classic that you're craving with mood boosting ingredients, or you could feel the feeling. And so for that day, you know, I was like, okay, this grilled cheese is just a side thing. So instead what I did is I was like, I wonder if Unsolved Mysteries is online anywhere. And I did find it. It was on Amazon Prime. It's a horrible show, by the way, but I watched some episodes and I kind of laughed because I just like the show was so bad and I didn't remember it being that bad. And so I just kind of had a moment and I was able to kind of honor that memory and that feeling in a different way. And so kind of to your point, you know, I think, yeah, if I allowed myself to constantly eat the things that mimic cravings, you know, I'd be eating grilled cheese and pizza and all these foods, you know, on a daily basis because they brought up a certain emotion or memory. But I think that if you kind of allow yourself to go a little bit deeper, you can not only learn from the cravings, but then when you do truly just want that grilled cheese, like it just becomes, you're going to have that grilled cheese and it's okay. It no longer has the same emotional foothold that it once had, you know?
That's an interesting story. I think that really does illustrate this situation. I mean, number one, the point you keep driving home here, which I think is so valuable, is that awareness and the asking of the questions, because that's really what got you to the underlying emotion behind craving the grilled cheese. So I think that's amazing, because instead of just being like, I'm craving grilled cheese, okay, but I don't eat Wonder Bread, so like, let me make the healthier version. Okay, I made it. And like, you know, that's still like kind of surface level. That's still just dealing with the food. But then you went to the mood. Nice job. And you really uncovered the deeper emotions. So like every night, like I could argue, especially in the winter, you know, I'm craving a big ass bowl of pasta or pizza. But what am I really craving? I mean, yeah, I feel like I'm really craving the pizza or the pasta. But like maybe I'm craving a cuddle because that's grounding. Or maybe I'm craving like candles because that's grounding. Because I think, like I said, that food really like makes me feel full and uncomfortable and grounded, or not uncomfortable, like cozy. So maybe, you know, once I realize that that's why I'm craving that kind of food all the time in the winter, it's easier to kind of look at other ways to satisfy that craving foodily. You know, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Cool. We're on the same page. You keep mentioning these mood boosting ingredients and that we ought to be eating them. And what are mood boosting ingredients?
My belief is that every fruit, vegetable, whole grain, you know, spice, whatever, has something to offer. If it comes from nature, if it's a whole food, that it has something to offer. Now, every body is different. So, you know, you'll hear people say, well, I'm grain free, I'm gluten free, I'm nightshade free, whatever it may be. It's because every body does process things, even healthy food, even healthy options differently. So it's important to keep that in mind, you know, all the time. But I do think that each food does serve a purpose. And so in the book, this was also part selfishly that I did this, but there's the complete guide to mood boosting foods. So I do map out fruits, vegetables, whole grains, you know, nuts, seeds, legumes, things like that, and why, what makes them mood boosting, what properties they have in them. And then there are certain foods that are higher in certain things and certain nutrients that can help and be beneficial to certain emotions. And so I go even deeper and I map out all of the recipes by emotion, and then whatever foods have, you know, a higher nutrient value or something like that to help with that certain emotion, I make sure to include those foods in that recipe section. So I do think that food has a complete effect on our health and our well-being and our mental health. But, you know, again, I'll keep going back to, that's why I think you need the emotions and the food. That's why I don't think, you know, I think they just go hand in hand so much that it's to say, you know, to say to someone, oh, if you eat this food, you'll feel better. Well, yeah, you may feel better physically, but if you hate your job, if you're in a bad relationship, that's still going to impact your feelings and your mood. You know, the food can help you, you know, maybe get to a healthier place or get to a more mentally stable place where you have the ability to speak your mind or break up with a person that is, you know, a toxic person or whatever it may be. But you need both because it's, you know, that's the human condition.
Yeah. Like a kale smoothie is not going to make you like enjoy your job.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Sorry to break it to you, folks. I know kale's great, but not that great. So what are some examples of ingredients that can be detrimental for your mood?
I think, you know, the number one thing that I think across the board, all nutrition people can agree upon is, I would say sugar is one that can definitely impact your mood negatively. And, you know, it can be very addictive and can cause mood swings and a lot of health problems. I think that's, and it's also one that we tend to crave because sugar is hidden in a lot of things. And I think that's, you know, one thing that also just from a comfort standpoint, I think, you know, has been used often. I know when I was a kid and I would cry, my family, and, you know, they meant well, but they would say, oh, let's go to the penny candy store and you can pick out what you want. And so very early on, I equated, oh, I'm sad, you know, then Swedish fish are
Swedish fish. Oh man.
You know, I know they're going to make me feel better. So I definitely think sugar is something to note. I also think that that's probably the biggest one, and the one that, you know, other than that, I think there's different foods that can impact. And I don't even want to say be super detrimental, because I think that it's a very individualized thing, but things, you know, like gluten, some people can't process gluten, and you could take that even further and talk about, you know, genetically modified grains, and that's, you know, the culprit. So, I mean, all of those things, I think it comes down to really an individual, even caffeine, you know, caffeine in large doses, it is, you know, caffeine is a drug and it can deflate your mood and people have certain effects on it, you know? And so I think it also comes down, again, I'm going to keep hitting this point home, but to the awareness of your body. I was someone that I started drinking coffee when I was in eighth grade. I went from drinking Starbucks, chocolate brownie frappuccinos to straight black coffee within a year.
Oh my God.
And I was drinking it all the time. And then in college, I just, you know, and then finally it became this comfort thing for me where I felt like I had a habit, my energy was lacking. And so then I decided to quit and I noticed a huge difference. Like I felt so much better. I went through the withdrawal, everything. And then just like maybe 2 years ago, so I'd been off caffeine for like maybe 7 years. And then just like a year or two ago, I just decided to experiment with it because I just mainly wanted to see how my body would react. And I found that I can, you know, now I can drink a cup of coffee and or not, you know, like it's not that same mentality that I had before, that same kind of addiction that I had before. And now if I have a cup, you know, I'm fine. Like I don't have shakes. I don't feel the need to have it every day, you know? And so that's where I think also being aware of your body, because, you know, these things aren't inherently horrible for you, but I just think that understanding how your body processes them, how your body reacts to them, and the things that maybe you need to do in order to, you know, be able to digest it or whatever it may be, is really kind of a personal thing.
Lots of awareness is the theme of this episode, faux show.
It's so funny because my friend was making fun of me the other day because she was like, you're so aware of yourself that you can like call out your feelings. And I realized I do it all the time where I'll be like the other day, my friend, I was having a frustrating day and things just, this was like maybe a month and a half ago. And things just kind of like, I got to a frustrating point and I was probably hormonal and all these things. And I was also hungry, so that didn't help. And it was just all these things piling on. And then we get in the car and I needed to get somewhere. I was going to be late. And my friend was driving me and he took this other way that I normally wouldn't have taken. And there was traffic like backed up. And so now I was going to be late to this thing. And in that moment, I just was like, I could feel myself. Like I knew like, okay, this is it. Like, this is the thing like that's going to make me cry. And so I told my friend, I was like, hey, I just want to let you know, I know you've never seen me cry before, but I'm about to cry. Like, I was like, I've had a frustrating day. I was like, this is not your fault. You can't help the traffic. I am upset by it, but like, I'm just letting you know, I'm about to cry. It's not your fault. And like, I just had this whole conversation with him about my emotions. Like I was just so self-aware. Wow. And then I did cry and it was like all good. And I just said, okay, thank you. but now, so I'm to the point where I'm like so aware of my emotions that, it's kind of funny, but not that I'm expecting people to be that aware, but I think that the more that you're aware, I think actually the more, I don't want to say fun it is, but I think that you just learn so much about yourself and it truly benefits all areas of your life.
Totally. That's like an extreme awesome version of awareness for somebody listening. That's like, wow, that's professional level. I'm in the minor leagues. What's some advice you might be able to offer for somebody to start to become more aware?
You know, one of the things that you can do is maybe, you know, take a second to do kind of like a day recap. You know, if you find yourself not being able to be aware in the moment, maybe just kind of have a reflection on your day, whether it's before you go to bed or when you get home from work or whatever it may be. And if you can't do that, or if you don't think about it, then maybe add it to your calendar, you know, like say, if you have, for example, a meeting, you know, and you put it in your calendar and it's from 12 to 1, you know, put something in your phone at 1:15 and say like, hey, this is the 5-minute like awareness check-in or whatever, so that you can kind of assess, you know, your body and where you're at and, you know, how you were feeling. Because I think that's what it really takes, is just kind of allowing yourself to take that step back and do kind of like a little recap on it to get started until it becomes, you know, second nature.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. Thanks. So you mentioned it, and I was going to ask you about it anyway, that in your book, you do offer recipes and eating advice based on emotions, which I think is so fun and unique for a cookbook. So I was just wondering if, I don't know if you have your book in front of you or if you've mastered it so much you know it by heart, but could we go through some of those emotions and you can tell us how you suggest people eat based on when they notice they're feeling some certain emotion?
Sure. So if you are, for example, if you're sad, you know, if you're feeling sad, your goal really is to feel happy. Like that's what you're really looking, you know, to go after. But oftentimes when we're feeling sad, we tend to gravitate towards foods like carbs and sugar because, you know, so think like, you know, a cookie or pizza, because those give our body a temporary serotonin fix. And the serotonin can help, you know, increase our happiness and make us feel better. And so, you know, we look to the cookies and the pizza, but really those things, you know, help temporarily, but long term, you know, they don't. They wear off pretty fast. Right. And so really what our body needs is it needs things like magnesium, because magnesium can help your body develop serotonin. And so foods that are higher in magnesium are in this section. Also foods that are high in healthy fats, because it can help your brain and, you know, it helps your brain actually promote new cell growth, which can fight off the sadness. And so incorporating foods that are high in those things can then in turn help, you know, increase your happiness. So, cool. For example, there in this section, there's a quinoa pizza crust. So, you know, if you are feeling sad and you gravitate towards pizza, you could make the quinoa pizza crust. It's literally just quinoa with some soaked quinoa with some spices, and you put it in a food processor and lay it out and bake it for like 10, 12 minutes, take it out, flip it, add whatever kind of ingredients you want to top it with, and then put it back in the oven. And there you go. You have a nice healthy pizza that's high in, well, quinoa contains all of the essential amino acids. It's high in protein. So, you know, it just gives your body a nice boost. So that's kind of how I set them all up. So each section kind of tells you, you know, when you're craving this or when you're feeling this way, this is what your body gravitates towards because this is what your body's looking for, but this is what your body actually needs. And it's just going after these quick things because it's easy, but mm-hmm. what your body needs in the long run are these nutrients, and then these foods have them. And in turn, these recipes mimic comfort foods that you tend to go for during those emotional states, but that have those ingredients.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. What do you suggest when people are stressed or anxious? Is that a different types of foods than sadness?
Yeah. So, you know, when you're stressed and you're feeling anxiety, you know, your body is constantly on alert. And so you tend to crave things that are high in fat, sugar, and salt because it gives your body, you know, what you're really looking for in that instance is a grounding feeling, you know, like how you were kind of saying, you know, you tend to gravitate towards
pasta,
and which makes sense because you could have the, you know, like sugar from like the tomatoes, you have, you know, the salt, fat, like you want this like grounding type of food. And so, but really what your body really wants, again, magnesium is another one. GABA is also the neurotransmitter that is responsible for helping kind of shut off the brain or help get you into a sleep mode. And so your body is looking for that.
Where do you find that?
There's a ton of different foods that can help your body incorporate, you know, those specific nutrients. So in the stress section, you know, there's things like almonds, asparagus, avocado, beets, black beans, what else? Figs, nice. Mushrooms.
Lots of plants.
Yeah, lots of plants. And then from there, then what you can do is, you know, incorporating those nutrients into things. The other thing with this section is your body also tends, you know, if you think of food as an energy, you know, your body tends to crave foods that are grounding and low to earth. So carrots, sweet potatoes, you know, incorporating more of those foods to help from a physical standpoint, you know, they are grounded in nature, so they can help you feel more grounded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't it amazing how that works? Yeah. I love that you also have in this area bored as an emotion that you can identify and then eat specifically for that. What do you suggest people eat for boredom? Because what comes to mind for me is like popcorn or like little bites and snacky things that you definitely overeat on. So what do you suggest?
When you're physically bored, so are your neurotransmitters. They're also bored. And so they want something to do. They're like, yeah, grab the chips, grab the popcorn, grab this, grab that, because they're trying to really wake you up and give you energy, give you excitement, give you motivation to do something. And so it's one of those things where your body then just kind of starts like firing off things that, you know, like the crunchy or like, you know, whatever it may be, that's kind of that quick fix. And so when we're bored, the other thing that can happen is, you know, we're looking for something to do, to feel accomplished, especially because we're complex humans that we feel like we always need to be doing something to feel accomplished. And so I think also what happens, aside from like the physical standpoint of your neurotransmitters, what also happens is physically we're looking for something to do because it makes us feel accomplished. And even eating, as weird as that sounds, you know, if we're bored and we eat, like it can give us a sense of satisfaction that we did do something.
We're
you know?
Pathetic. We're kind of pathetic. If your biggest accomplishment is that you ate a bowl of popcorn, I am sorry, but you need to go do something.
Well, so it's funny because in this section, you know, I include foods that, you know, help get your neurotransmitters, you know, like things like iron that can help you like feel more energetic, or motivated or inspired, you know, obviously omega-3s and fatty acids. But also in that section, you know, what things that can you do that don't include food? And then also, if you're truly bored, a lot of the recipes in this section are kind of the harder recipes, not all of them, but they're a little bit more challenging, because my take on it is that if you are bored, that you can make the recipe, you know, you can take the time.
Yeah, that's so true.
Actually, it gives you something to do.
There you go. You feel accomplished.
Yeah. So
that's a hoot.
Yeah.
That's really funny. Well, you also have hangry and exhausted/tired. Should we dive into those two since we're doing so well here?
Sure.
I'm enjoying this. This is fun. What about when you're, when you're hangry, what the heck do you eat?
So when you're hangry, I always say you don't care if it was made by Julia Child or a child. You just need food.
I like it.
And need it now. And usually what happens is your hormones are kind of going a little crazy when you're hangry, because your body starts, you know, if you go so long without eating, your body's low in glucose. And so your body tends to go in this fight or flight mode. It doesn't know if it should like shut down to store energy for you, or, you know, if it should start fighting so that you can get the meal that you need. So your body kind of just goes a little bit haywire, and your hormones start kind of going nuts, because they start driving certain hormones to help you regain energy so that you can, you know, if you think of like the caveman theory, like so that you can get the food that you need. You may feel like foggy or shaky. So that's what's physically happening to your body. So I think, you know, there's a couple things, you know, eating foods that are high in fiber, they can help slow down the blood sugar absorption, mm-hmm. which can help your mood stabilize throughout the day. So that's something, you know, to think about both before and during, you know, making sure that you're eating fiber. Like if you are going to have a long day and you know that like you're doing a later lunch, you know, equipping your body with things that can help hold you over longer is really important. Also cooked foods, you know, I think cooked foods are good because they give your body that warming sensation and they can help with the digestion process. Mm-hmm. So it can help you, feel a little bit fuller and not like you maybe just grazed, that sometimes, you know, like you may know if you have I had a smoothie for breakfast and I'm pretty hungry right now. So, and it didn't really feel like I actually ate, you know, too much.
Yeah.
So now I'm feeling like, okay, I would like more of a meal, you know, something that I can chew, that I can process in that way. And so I think it, you know, just helps you stay a little bit fuller longer. And so, and then also, so the hangry section also is more, you know, there's quick things, because they're things that, you know, if you're hangry, you don't.
It's an emergency.
It's an emergency. But then also things that can help equip you so that you, for a lot more of like a long-term thing, so that you stay, you know, so that you stay more energized throughout the day, and that you have the nutrients to help you sustain a little bit longer.
That's so smart. What are you going to have for lunch?
I think I'm going to have a farro salad.
Ooh, yeah. Yum. Decadent. All right. Final emotion is exhausted. What do you suggest peeps do when they're exhausted or super tired?
So if you're super tired, you know, your body usually wants high fat, high carbs, because your brain is, your neurotransmitters are feeling a little unbalanced, and also, you know, somewhat sleepy. So you tend to go towards things that, you know, people tend to go towards the caffeine or energy drink or whatever is going to give them that quick fix, because we want to feel alive,
jacked up.
Yes, exactly. But I think foods that, you know, have, again, the high water content are really good, because, and just drinking water in general, because, and my husband always says, water, it's the original energy soda.
Nice. Good one.
Because, it can help you feel more energized. Also foods that are high in vitamin C can help turn your fat into energy, giving your body, you know, a quicker boost, but still also providing your body with nutrients rather than just something that'll temporarily help and then leave you dragging. B vitamins also, because, you know, those help energize you and they can turn food to energy, fuel pretty fast as well. Iron's another one. healthy fats. So all of those, I mean, there's a ton that, you know, for making you feel energized. And again, it's the twofold thing. It's some of these can help really give you that sensation right away. And some, you know, are things to incorporate. So that way it no longer, you know, that 2 p.m. slump becomes less and less because now you're fueling your body with things that just naturally help keep you energized, you know, throughout the day.
Like the prevention, the preventative, like you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah. And I think too, it's also important to note that if you are someone that has, you know, you were like me and were doing like 8 cups of black coffee a day.
Oh my God.
I know, you know, if you go from that to drinking lemon water or it's not going to be the same type of energy right away. It's going to take some time for your body to rebalance itself, to readjust. And then eventually, you know, you'll have that period where you start to notice, oh, wow, yeah, drinking more water, I do feel more energized.
But like real energy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like grounded, like I'm a real person, not like a person flying around the world. So how do you approach food guilt? Because I know you actually wrote a whole book on food guilt. Just give me the spark notes of your philosophy about guilt and feeling bad, beating yourself up when you've eaten something. Like maybe you were craving, like what if in that day you actually did indulge in that rather unhealthy grilled cheese sandwich? Like, would you have felt guilt after? And how do you suggest people that maybe do sometimes indulge their naughtier quote unquote cravings? How do you help them not like want to beat themselves up later?
Yeah. So before I totally would have done that. Now I wouldn't. I would just eat it and be done with it. But I think, you know, I did write a whole book about this. I did a survey and I found that 85% of women and 65% of men feel guilty about their food choices on a daily basis. So that's everything from waking up in the morning, going, you know, looking in your fridge, to making your lunch, to going to a cafeteria, to going out to eat with friends.
Well, we make thousands or hundreds or something. What is there? Like, I don't know. I feel like there's an astronomically large number of how many food choices we make in a day.
Yeah, I mean, and
I don't know the stats.
to think that 85% of the time,
it's crazy.
Women
it's so
are
sad.
Feeling guilty about it. Yeah,
ugh.
And so what I found is that when you feel guilty about something, it strikes the same responders as, you know, if stress responders,
yeah.
So that fight or flight mode. So what often happens is, you know, we initially like we feel bad, we feel guilty, you know, we have our anxieties raised, you know, we're stressed out about the decision that we're making. We kind of mentally play this tennis match, go back and forth. I shouldn't. Then we go for it. And the whole time we're stressed out about it, saying, I shouldn't be doing this. I feel so bad. And then, you know, we have a couple bites in and we're like, well, I just went for it. I might as well eat the whole thing. And so then we eat the whole thing. And then afterwards, we feel guilty about it. And we're like, well, now I feel sick because I just ate that whole thing. And it just becomes this like cycle that is just so detrimental to our health. And so, you know, when you feel guilty about something and it strikes those fight or flight modes, what happens is, you know, your body goes into that fight or flight mode. So your blood rushes to your hands to fight something off, to your feet to run away, and to your brain to think. All the blood rushes away from your stomach. So the last thing that it thinks about doing is digesting whatever you just had. So oftentimes we think, you know, it could be that we overate and, you know, our stomach hurts, or it could be we're not used to eating that and our stomach hurts. But I found a lot of the time it's actually the stress that makes our stomach hurt. And
this is like what I talk about all the time. Thank you. Keep going.
Yeah. it's the stress behind it. And so, you know, my philosophy is if you are going to eat something, if you're going to indulge, you know, to go into it with a really positive attitude and say, yeah, like I'm going to have this pizza. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy every last bite. I'm going to savor it for what it is. And what I find is if you allow yourself to do that, then most people tend to not only digest the food better, they don't feel the need to overeat. They eat it for what it is. They enjoy it and they can move on. Whereas if you feel guilty about it and you feel stressful about it, you tend to overeat. You know, you tend to feel like, you know, bad about it and you feel guilty about it. Your stomach, you know, may have stomach issues from it. And then what also happens is you actually don't get the satisfaction from it.
Yeah,
that you
would if you're beating yourself up.
Yeah. So then what you end up doing is you're still looking for that satisfaction. If you allow yourself to have it, if I would have said, you know what, I'm going to allow myself to have this grilled cheese. This is what it is. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to savor every second of it. I'm going to feel good about it. I'm going to, you know, really taste it, really enjoy it. You know, I would have digested it fine. It would have been fine. And then I could have moved on from it. Whereas, you know, if I beat myself up about it and did all of this, then what would happen is usually I would end up craving a grilled cheese again because I'm looking to feel satisfied, but I never did because I spent too much time beating myself up over it than actually enjoying it.
Okay. That was awesome. I'm really glad I asked you that question. I don't really have much to say because I want to rewind that and listen to it again. So if you're listening at home, just go back a few minutes, maybe like 2 minutes, and listen to that again, because that was an epic response to that question. I really appreciate that. I think that was just really awesome. I don't have anything to say. Mic drop.
Mic drop.
Well, let me ask you a few final personal questions, because you've been telling us how, you know, we ought to think about food. Let's talk about how you eat food for a real sec, a hot sec, a short sec.
Yeah.
What is your favorite plant party restaurant or good food mood restaurant?
I just like so many different restaurants that I'm like, wait, which one is it? I think one that is kind of more of like an on the go type of thing that I like is Sweet Green, the salad place. That's kind of one of
you have those in Pittsburgh?
No, but I do really like them. So I do, anytime I see one, I'm like, oh yeah, let me go there.
One a block away from me, not to make you jealous.
That does make.
But you have Burgatory, which I'm gonna just put a little shameless plug. It's my uncle's restaurant in Pittsburgh that has the world's best veggie burgers that you can like BYO, build your own, not bring your own.
Yeah, they're really, really good. I do love Burgatory. That's one of my like staple go-tos in Pittsburgh. We did have an amazing place that unfortunately closed here that was like my favorite. What I liked about them is they just did very interesting things, and they also nothing was fake. So not, you know, you wouldn't get any, you know, like processed fake meat, essentially. Everything was like whole food based. And I just think that it tasted really good. So unfortunately they closed in Pittsburgh. So now I'm on the hunt for finding kind of the next best here, but I do love Burgatory.
All right, fine. We'll go with Burgatory and Sweet Green.
Yeah.
What is your favorite plant to eat?
My favorite plant, avocado.
Good. What's your favorite way to eat it?
Usually on toast with salt and pepper.
Yum. So good. What is your most used kitchen tool?
Hands down, I guess it's a toss up, my NutriBullet or my food processor.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you use your food processor for?
Literally everything, because I'm lazy and I hate mixing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just throw everything in there, and that's how I usually, most of the recipes that are like cookies or brownies or whatever, I actually don't mix them. I just throw everything in there and call it
a day. So easy. I love it. Say, I use mine all the time as well. What is a book besides your own that has inspired you in some awesome way?
My favorite book still to this day is Marianne Williamson, A Return to Love.
Oh, nice. What a great book.
It has nothing to do with food, but it was one of, I would say, a very transformative books in my life. I just really, I keep it by my bedside and go back to it all the time.
Oh, that's sweet. That's how I am with Add More Ink to Your Life. Gabby's like Bernstein's like spin on Course in Miracles.
Yeah.
A Course in Miracles. That's where it's at. Okay. Where should peeps go to learn more about you and their food and their moods and what you suggest they eat when they have moods for food?
Well, my website is foodmoodgirl.com. There's also a craving chart that you can download on there. So some of the things that we talked about today are made available in a really cute chart. So you can have
we
for
all
reference.
Love cute charts.
My book, Eat Your Feelings. You can read all about the philosophy there. It's also written in a kind of humorous tone because I don't like to take myself too seriously when it comes to this stuff, because it can be a very serious topic, especially when you talk about feelings. Mm-hmm. But I like to do it in a fun way.
It's so cute. The illustrations are great. The photos are great and vibrant. I love it. It's a wonderful book.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really fun to put together. So I had a lot. Actually, I had the most fun making this book. It was definitely probably the biggest highlight of my last year. But I had met one of my best friends now through creating the book. It was a female-centric team that worked on it. Everything from my editor to the illustrator to the photographer to the food stylist. And so,
epic girl power.
Yeah, super girl power. Embracing the inner Spice Girls.
That's so funny. Well, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing all your knowledge with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is awesome. Yay. And I can't wait to meet you for a veggie burger in Pittsburgh soon.
Yes. Yes. Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I hope you're feeling pretty confident that you now know how to coddle your cravings. I am just smitten with the three options Lindsay says we've got when we're faced with a craving. One, eat the thing and don't feel guilty about it. Two, make the healthier version of that thing. And three, feel the feeling. Yes, 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 yes. If you're saying yes to and you think you can think of a friend who would also say yes, please share this episode with them. And if you ever have a craving that you've decided you need to pull a number two and make the healthier version of that thing, just so you know, there are brownies, ice cream, cookie dough, pizza, mac and cheese, peanut butter cups, and a better than a Snickers bar bites recipe, plus so many more Party in My Plants recipes waiting for you at partyinmyplants.com. And for the detailed show notes of this chat, plus a heck of a lot more that makes being healthy not sucky, head to partyinmyplants.com/83.